Welcome to the Perfectly Sancho episode 649. I am Chris, as always, joined by Tony.
Guys, what's hotter, Taylor Swift at a Chiefs game or Jeff when he falls into a campfire?
Is that a real world thing that happened?
You missed this?
Jeff did fall into a campfire, yes.
Last weekend. He took a header into a fire pit.
Oh, I did.
Burned off half his arm. Scroll back on the group chat to like last weekend.
There are pictures, girl. Pictures.
Yeah, there's a picture.
You know, like, I'm not scrolling back now. Never mind.
It's nightmarish.
I mean, I might. We'll see.
Jeff smiling with like black charred arm.
Yeah, everything's.
He might have still been drunk, actually.
Probably. Hopefully, I hope he was for his own sanity.
So that happened. Earl is with us as well.
Yes, kids never grow up. Nothing good comes from adulthood. It's just a lot of work you don't have time for. I don't know where they expect you to find time to do half the stuff they want you to do. That's my positive message of the week.
Great. Smiles for everyone.
Yes. Starting this one off super strong. We're not sure where Jeff is. He was, we did mention he burnt himself. He's feeling a little under the weather. But Walt is graciously joining us to fill in.
Happy to be here. I would like to have a statement prepared. If I like to add to the, I like the committee to unanimously vote to allow this to be on the record.
There's no committee, Walt.
This podcast is literally being recorded. So
yeah, it is being recorded.
There is indeed a record. It will be on the record.
Okay. The statement is as follows. Jeff might have fallen in a fire, but the pooper survived.
I mean, that's
all.
Okay.
That is important.
As long as the pooper's okay. I mean, that's a...
It'd be a weird important. Way to fall into a fire. Like, if you burned your arm
like
and
ass
your hand and your ass.
I was going to say, is there a good way to fall into a fire?
No.
The best way is to fall next to the fire or not fall at all.
Those are
better options.
Yes,
and also, Mr. Chairman, with unanimous consent, I am submitting evidence of said accident into the Discord chat.
I mean,
for the record,
I don't know if anybody was disputing the accident happening.
His arm looks pretty bad.
The that grate that, and I don't know if that's in your photo there. No, it's not. There's this campfire grate that looks like one of those big steel grills, but you would pick it up and put it over the fire, I guess, to cook. And they had moved it because they weren't cooking. And Jeff tripped over that, fell into the fire. And that is the end result of falling into said fire. Lots of charred skin and blistered skin.
Jeff, if you're listening to this and think we're making fun of you, all I have to say is this. Burn.
Jesus.
Wow.
One more piece of evidence for the record has been submitted. it's now in the chat. It's a picture of the grill.
He tripped over that.
Thank you. Unanimous consent. I reclaim my time or whatever.
Robert's rules of orders are failing Walter here.
Nobody was responding to you. You can't reclaim
the chair never recognized him. Like none of what he says counts. So
that's right. Sorry, Walt.
It's all gone.
Damn it! I pulled the Borbert. God damn it!
Our resident wilderness expert, though, Sean, he did say that those grill things, those fire covers, are dangerous. because you will end up tripping over them at some point, and they're always right next to a fire, so.
Yep.
Anyway, some stuff, I don't know, did some stuff happen this week? I'm not even sure.
Well, oh, yes. Yeah.
There was at least one big thing that happened.
There was a bunch of layoffs. Creative Assembly, Sega, also makers of Tony's, games. Total War games.
Yes.
They laid off a chunk of people. And then Epic, who is maybe one of the biggest and most successful gaming companies in the world. They have one of the biggest games. They have the engine of record for most people with Unreal 5. They are laying off 16% of their staff, almost 900 people. So
it's mostly from the team they most recently acquired, from what I briefly read, the Fall Guys team.
Oh.
That team is basically the one that took the hit.
I also did not realize, what is it, they own Bandcamp?
Yeah, that seems like a weird...
It's so weird how much, how few companies own so much. Yeah. Like, when they were like, oh yeah, they're selling Bandcamp, and they own that? Okay. I don't know how that fits in their portfolio, but sure. I mean, I guess it doesn't.
Yeah, that seems like somebody was just, we're gonna buy this thing because we like it, and they couldn't figure out a way to make it work business wise because you don't distribute music, independent music at that, like, doesn't make any sense.
Yeah,
I want to go back to Creative Assembly for a moment.
Yeah, yeah.
So the newest Total War game comes out next week.
That's what I thought. I thought it was very soon.
Total War Pharaoh, or Pharaoh Total, I think, whatever the order is. But
right.
But this, I think these layoffs are from a different project that was canceled. It wasn't a Total War game. It was some game I had not heard of.
Hyenas, which is...
Yeah, it was a live service game.
Yeah, apparently a game they announced before, and I'm like, I also had never heard of it. But... Mm-hmm.
Overwatch type game, hero shooter.
Yeah. But it's weird because apparently it was far enough in development. I think it was in beta or something. So it doesn't seem like it was a quality thing. It just seems like they probably figured we weren't going to recoup our money from it.
I've never heard of this game. There evidently is a trailer out there, though.
Yep.
But that's, I mean, it's not good that, but it's good that the it's not the Total War teams taking a hit on this.
Epic, it's just kind of bit themselves in the ass because apparently there's a bunch of tweets from earlier this year where Tim Sweeney was like, essentially making fun of other companies for like the big tech layoffs at the start of the year and how Epic wasn't doing it. And then by the end of the year, you're laying off like almost 900 people.
Yeah, that seems like I saw the meme tweets he had put out there, and that seemed a little shitty because you're now doing exactly, and to a greater extent too, like most of these companies that are laying off people aren't laying off 16% of their work staff.
So many people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What was I going to say? Again, not as important or not as pressing, but I mean, this also came out in the week where I think they also announced that they are raising the price of V-Bucks for Fortnite. So also carry is that apparently Fortnite was not making the money they were hoping with it. I mean, I assume like all the collabs they've been doing have not come cheap. And I think that's a thing a lot of people pointed out. it's like a lot of this, like sometimes it's, you know, it always sucks, but some of this is very Epic driven with like giving away games for free on Epic Games Store and all the collabs they do with Fortnite. And it's like, yeah, you're spending more than you're bringing in.
Which is very much what Tim Sweeney said. He said, for a while now, we've been spending way more than we earn. Seems like a bad way to run a company, but
I mean, it's kind of hard to, without seeing the financials, right, which they're never going to disclose to the public, on how they allocated money between the teams and what to them is like operating costs, like signing, getting Disney to fork over all the Marvel licenses so they'd be in Fortnite, et cetera, et cetera. I don't know what their formula was for, we spent X amount, we're going to get this much back in digital transactions, people buying skins and all that stuff.
Right.
But like the live service games are all taking a hit right now. That kind of, the hype and the fad and all that stuff, they're all kind of taking a little hit. They've all been taking hits, and the smaller ones just can't survive past 6 months. Look at Diablo 4. Look at the player base for Diablo 4. It's not even like comparable to what the launch was.
No, yeah. I think that's always going to be the case with those things. I mean, we've seen it time and time again. I think more so it's scary, I guess, for the industry as a whole when it's like Fortnite, because that was the golden goose. This is what everybody's been chasing. And if Epic's saying like, yeah, we can't really make this work as well either, what is everybody else going to do?
Well, I guess what to put a little bit of context, right? What they're saying is it's not working under the financial model we made it operate under. We spent all that money to get the licensing and developing an engine, all that stuff, et cetera, et cetera. And it's not working under that. So we need to scale in order to find a better formula.
Yeah. You also got to think like a lot of those licensing agreements were made before inflation kicked in. So like, yeah, they made all those agreements, they owe all this money, and then the money that they were taking in was worth so much less over like the past year. And now
people have less. People have less money to spend on stuff.
Right.
So they're not buying, you know, 30,000 V-Bucks or whatever it is. I don't
need to buy anything to play Fortnite and have a good time. You can have a good time for $0. And if you don't have money to spend on other things, well, it's a great place to be.
Right.
I mean, on top of that, like the competition for home entertainment opened up, right? Before it was like, we're all stuck at home. What else are we going to do? And now everything opened up again. And now there's, you know, movies are back, you know, like concerts are back, everything's back. So there's that competition of, do I really need to spend $20 in V-Bucks for another battle pass? Or right, do I want to spend it on something else, you know?
And that's a reality that, I mean, you mentioned movies, but that's also something movies are going through. It's like, oh, we're back in business, but do we, I mean, with movies, it's like, do I need to spend $20 to go to the theater when you're going to be home to rent or buy in like a month for that one price for the entire family? Or you're going to be on Disney Plus or Max or Netflix in like 2 months. I can wait.
Yep. Yep. That's every industry's feelings some kind of way in effect from all this stuff, where the market's just, I guess, readjusting would be the word. I don't know what the word would be for what the market's doing right now. Because in the home buying aspect, it's an absolute mess. But in everything else, like grocery stores, it's inflated, right? For video games, it seems to be dropping off. So it's kind of weird.
Well, I mean, that makes perfect sense, though, right? Like groceries are now, you know, for me, anecdotal evidence, like it was costing me $200, you know, every other week to buy groceries for my family. Now it's $350. Well, that's $150 I don't have to spend on games now, like, or anything, right? Like I don't have that $150 extra cash. to buy on frivolous things. Like, so maybe instead of me buying 3 games a month or whatever, I'm buying 1.
Right.
I mean, I'm not, because I'm stupid.
Yeah, because you can't help yourself. No, a normal person would react
differently. Right, yes.
Yeah. I saw someone, to kind of put the final like ribbon on this subject, someone said it on Twitter that how does a multi-billion dollar industry continue to have so many layoffs and struggle to keep people employed? And I think that's like a short-sighted kind of viewpoint. When you what you gotta really realistically think is like the industry is constantly adjusting to what the player base interest is. If you lose interest, then it drops. Those doesn't mean like the money is like running out. It just means the money is being spent in different areas and different games.
I would say yes and no. I do agree with the sentiment, but I think sometimes the industry is trying to push players towards what they want the industry to be. Like, again, it's not like there was a ton of people craving games as services, but people saw like, oh, you know, PUBG did well, Fortnite's doing well, clearly there's a market for this, where it's like, these games were fun, they were different, we don't need 36 versions of games as services now. We're on, like, again, it's kind of like the old debate with streaming. It's like, oh, we had Netflix, Netflix was the place to go for all of this, everybody's like, we're gonna get into the streaming business. Now we just recreated cable, where everybody's getting like, you have one of 15 streaming services that you may not share with friends because you're just buying the stuff that you had before. But there was money here. We had to chase that money.
The other thing is that you look at all these games of service. Over the past few years, there's been so few actual game releases that they didn't really have as much competition as they have now. Like, there are actual games to play now that are coming out constantly. So they have like a competition from like a fresh new game every month, as opposed to the COVID years where there were so many fewer games.
Yeah, and even on the micro level, right? Look how many esports teams like dropped out or leagues disappeared overnight. It's the signs are all there that the industry is in the middle of a shakeup, and luckily, like the AAA games don't seem to be being affected. It looks like Starfield sold a ton. It looks like Spider-Man's gonna be a gigantic hit as well, and it's just adjusting, I guess.
Yeah, those esport teams though, I mean, some of that is the economy related too, right? Because like, they never really made money. they got like venture capitalists to invest like the Overwatch League and all that shit, and now like Activision is like, we'll maybe buy you guys out for a fraction of what you originally paid to get into the league, but please, like, if take the payout and go away.
I mean, as an industry, if you bought in and you're like, I'm gonna be a manager for a team, your success is whether or not you win prize money. Yeah. You win prize money, you're basically like the old boxers from back in the day. If you didn't make the damn money, how are you going to pay your locker at the gym, you know, to keep training? It's crazy.
And like that prize money is drying up because like companies like Microsoft, who runs like, you know, Halo Championship Series, like they're not putting as much in to the prize pool as before. So now like that payout is even less. Like esports is such a weird thing.
And I also think, like, I mean, it kind of, like, we talk about esports now, but I feel like, because was it Spike that had, like, the Ultimate Madden play or something like that? Like, they had a Madden TV.
Yeah, back in the day. Yeah.
So I feel like people have always kind of chased that. I mean, I assume. I had never heard the story, but, like, that's what Gran Turismo is based off of, like, the real life story of somebody who won a competition and became a driver.
There was the Sony competition to... Oh, like, I mean, I remember it being advertised to, like, hey, you know, you're really great at Gran Turismo. You should try your hand at winning this tournament. You might get a chance to actually be a race car driver. Which is just, I mean, it's insane that thing actually happened, but.
I was just saying, because I also remember Sony had a social media contest, didn't they? Like, they used to have, oh crap, like you'd win it and you'd become like a Sony ambassador or something. And I knew somebody who won it. It was like a Twitter thing.
Sounds familiar.
This was like the early 2010s, like back when social media was fresh and new. I just remembered something like I forget what it was called, but they had like a competition of some sort where you'd become like a Sony ambassador or something like that. So yeah.
in a year where this has been maybe one of the best years for game releases in recent memory, but in terms of the industry, it's been not great for employment there. So, was there anything else that you guys caught news wise?
Yeah, I was gonna say actual big news was the one we didn't talk about yet. I mean, I guess it's not big news, but Jim Ryan stepping down as the head of Sony Entertainment. Granted, I feel like Jim Ryan, at least to me, didn't have the same. He wasn't Kaz Harai or what was the guy before him? Trent?
Yes.
Maybe.
But Ishida? What was it? Yes, but yeah, Jim Ryan kind of just exists.
And mostly in a negative capacity.
Yes. I mean, my first reaction when I read that was like, oh, this is the guy who is not a fan of backwards compatibility because he said those old games look like shit in HD.
Yeah,
that is what some consumers would say. But you don't always say that.
Yes.
So that to me, that's his legacy. He blocked a lot of like classic PlayStation games from just populating the PSN until now.
Plus, he also spent all that money trying to stop Activision and Microsoft from becoming one unit and failed miserably.
Yeah, there's that portion too. Didn't go well for him.
I wonder if that factored into the board being like, oh yeah, we'll totally take your resignation. You're good. Yeah.
I mean, he'd been there, to be fair, he'd been there for 30 years, but he'd probably want to stay on longer if he could. Like, mm-hmm. You know, eke a little more out of that CEO level salary, but perhaps it's time for Sony to move on, get some, because he presided over like Sony's decline as the market leader. But Sony was way ahead and they're not now.
I was going to say, they are, according to some people, the market leader. I always hate that metric because theoretically nobody would ever agree it's actually Nintendo right now.
It depends on the market.
Right.
It depends on the market.
But if you count the markets as North America's, which is ahead, Europe switches ahead, Japan switches ahead, that would make the company that owns that. But it's never seen as because it tends to be the hardware that most third-party support, which is Sony. But yes, it's a very interesting dynamic the industry has where it's like, we have a market leader that is not necessarily leading the markets, but they are treated as such. I mean, they are ahead of their competition if you directly reference the Xbox as their one and only competition. But yes, it's a very interesting dynamic.
I think you guys have said it. Like, I think Chris has said it specifically. If I recall some of the past podcasts, PlayStation is such a well marketed brand that people would line up and pay stupid amounts of money to get it when the PS5 came out, just to have it sit there and do nothing because there's no games for it.
Yeah,
yeah. And you know what? There's no shame in it if you can get. The market to a place where you can do that, or you just sell on the fact that like, oh, we know all the games are going to come here.
Mm-hmm.
That's been Sony's bread and butter since the PlayStation, and I don't mean to diminish them in any capacity. They've really turned on their first party support with the PlayStation 3 and beyond, but the assumption has always been like, you want Final Fantasy, like Microsoft may get it, Nintendo a chance, but those games won't pass on Sony because it's chicken and egg. Those games won't pass on Sony because they're the market leader. The market leader gets those games because they are the presumed market eater, and it's just kind of, you know, like, this is kind of when you bet all in on the market eater who does not end up being the market eater, you end up with the PlayStation 3 era, which hurt a lot of third parties for backing a console that did not really find its first gear until like the final 2 years of that, and that's when the other competitions were winding down.
Yep.
But I do think some of that leads into a question Walt, you posed to us about console war bullshit, though. Like, Sony has marketed themselves so well that, like, not only will they go buy a machine that will sit on your shelf for a year without anything direct to play, these people will, like, very vocally shout down anybody else, or support for anybody else, to show their loyalty to Sony. I mean, Xbox and Nintendo also have these fans, but
yeah,
Sony very, very vocal.
I came up with that question after, like, this past week. I think I told you guys, hey, you guys noticing that the review bombs for Starfield? They're literally buying copies of the game so they can post a verified review bombed it and then returned the game. And they're doing this countless amount of times in order to drop the score.
I'm always so fascinated when people have all this money. Like, I feel like there's so many other things you could be doing with your money.
Well, but they're not spending. So yeah, if you haven't played a game on Steam for, I think, 2 hours, you can buy it, review it, and then return it and get all your money back.
So they're review bombing it on Steam.
On Steam.
So that it reflects a Metacritic and all that stuff, yeah.
So that is bad for my... But are Steam reviews on Metacritic?
No.
Steam
reviews... It just looks bad. Like, it just ruins...
It's just...
Yeah.
I kind of get it, but I'm also like... Yeah. But like, is the point here to make Microsoft look bad on PC because they don't like to get
I guess a lot of the anger came with towards Bethesda for not insisting on having their main corporation push it on the PlayStation and develop on the PlayStation.
I mean, at the end of the day, the people at Bethesda could be like, we want it to be on PlayStation, we want it to be on everything, and Microsoft gets to make that call. Like,
yeah.
And if you spend the amount of money that Microsoft did to buy Bethesda, you're going to make at least some of their shit exclusive, because that's why you want people to buy it from you.
And on the other, there's also an argument in that when they're developing for multiple consoles, even Todd Howard, I think, went on record saying this, right? Like, just developing a one console with a PC port, it made things so much easier for us than trying to develop on multiple consoles at the same time and trying to figure out what the balance is. And in a game this big, I imagine there's a little bit of relief in the building when they're like, oh, thank God, we don't have to code this for PlayStation.
Wasn't one of the reasons that Microsoft pushed to buy Bethesda that Sony was trying to make Starfield PlayStation exclusive?
There was an offer, I think, that came out in the FTC hearing, you know, preliminary injunction hearing, that Sony had placed an offer, a pretty substantial offer, to make Starfield exclusive to the PlayStation 5. So that kind of, you know, Microsoft was then like, well, we have more money than you, and we'll just buy them. I mean, and it's a shitty way, but it's like, it's, you know, that's how these escalation things work, is like, you try to keep one thing off, well, the other group is gonna, they're gonna use their money as well. Microsoft just uses it more violently in that case. Like,
yeah.
And it's bad, right? Cause like, I think the market would be better if Bethesda and ZeniMax were free from Xbox. You know, but who knows? So,
I think regardless, we would still have that leveling set of insanity where people are modding the game so they can have a PlayStation startup screen.
Okay, so that was just a different level of
so
statue.
Right, because like you're not playing it on a PlayStation. Like if you're playing it on a PC and you've modded it into your, you're just playing it on PC.
It wasn't even that. It was the fact that, again, it's not like you see it thought of that often. And I don't know. I just was like, this is what you wasted your time on? Like, all the things you could have modded. It was like, I want to see my company logo on this startup. I'm sure
we're going to dive into this more at the end when we do questions, right? But the tribalism is so toxic and kind of built into this industry that I don't know how you correct it.
You don't. I will say I think it's not necessary. I think it's very much prevalent in the gaming industry, but I don't think it's exclusive to the gaming industry. And I think part of it was just the rise, like the gaming industry rose so closely with the internet, and the internet was so very much like you have to love this thing. This is how you make a community. This is how you bond with people. You make fun of everything that's different and not yours. You know, I've shared before, I used to be a big old troll on like the Xbox Addicts forums back in the early 2000s, because, you know, like I was proud GameCube person, and it's like, yeah, it's nonsensical and stupid. I'm happy that, like, you know, I went to college, my roommate had an Xbox, I paid him, you know, like I'm okay with, but like there are people who never grow out of that because that is their personality. That's all they know what to do and how to behave and how to interact with stuff. And it is a damn shame. And I will say, I think it's gotten better with time, but I do think there was a period of time where I think the industry and like those companies really promoted that type of tribalism as well, because it made it easier. So you can sell to people who are passionate, who will fight for you. They will be there day one, no matter what you do. And I think, you know, a lot of people did that. I mean, I don't know if I'm sure you folks remember, you're older than me, but I remember a day when like Kevin from PlayStation did a commercial for Goodyear or whatever, and people were so riled up they got him fired because he shouldn't be promoting non PlayStation services even in a non Sony capacity.
I mean, even before that, you remember I'm sure Chris and Tony probably remember it a little bit more. The Crash Bandicoot commercials.
Are you saying we're old? Is that what just happened?
Yes, I'm old too. All right. He's outside with a megaphone, outside of like Nintendo headquarters, calling them out and stuff.
I mean, going further back than that, like, I mean, you know, Sega does, but Nintendo don't. Yeah. That was a token for Sonic. But I feel like some of that was playful. Like the Sonic one was really just like the difference between the two of them. Like, yes, they're going after Nintendo, but like that was where others, I think they encourage the tribalism to a degree where it's not just like playful banter. It's like, it's us and them. We really want to make sure we win and we need you to do it.
Well, and they've been both Xbox, Nintendo, and PlayStation also, they do this, but they have engaged in like this, it's misinformation almost to a point where there was a game that was recently released, recently announced, and Sony immediately had a post out that was like, you know, this is the new PlayStation game or whatever, and it's like, if you read into it, it's coming to everything, but they have to be out there saying it's theirs. It's coming first to theirs.
Yes, I will. I think we campaign about this all the time. I owed all of them, especially when everybody does it in such a weird way. Like, I think Nintendo's like a console first on, like, one of them's like exclusively on this console first. Then it's like first on this. I'm like, so it's coming to other things. It's just like, it may come to yours like a week sooner, because they never tell you exactly what that means. Just like, yeah, we'll be there. Yes, I really hate that. I mean, we've talked about this before, world premiere stuff in general, and
world premiere.
Like, if you keep on saying it, starts using our meaning.
I think I mentioned in our chats, like, God damn, is Summer Game Fest ever going to end? This dude's all over the world promoting
this
thing.
It's still going on. It's still going on.
That's a different beast, but that's also very similar in that, like...
Yeah. He just E3's dead, man. Let it die.
It's an umbrella term for anything that happens in the month of June and July as part of Summer Game Fest. I'm like, that's not a show, then. That is just a blanket marketing thing he used for... Like, this isn't July. This counts for Summer Game Fest. It's like, does it? Did somebody tell you this is Summer Game Fest? Or are you just hoping
that nobody knows? He's that guy who sells a ShamWow late at night. That's what he is for video games.
Pretty much.
One other thing, I mean, because we've already kind of deep dived into the console wars bullshit here.
Yeah.
But do you guys remember on GameSpot, the website?
Yes, not the store.
Yes, yeah. I was like, am I saying this right? Forums were a bigger thing about 15 or so years ago, but they had one that was specifically for this bullshit called Console Wars that, like, where they encouraged it, right? Like, and these sites still do. They will headline shit in shitty ways to get people riled up. So that their comment section gets, you know, blown up with comments, which pushes it higher up in the search ratings. It's all gamesmanship and bullshit, but.
Which is a damn shame, because I would also denote, like, that's kind of where we are with politics as well. It's like us and them, and it's like, I'm not going to sit here and be like, I don't care about Republicans in that regard, but, you know, it is very much like that's what you see. It's like, oh, you know, like, I remember, I mean, we still have this, but I remember in the early 2000s, like, watching The Daily Show and how they would always talk about the real Americans and American heartland. And I'm just like, why is the Midwest considered more American than the rest of the country? Like, what really, like, oh, that's where the hard work. Like, do they assume that everybody who lives in the coast are just rich? Because I know plenty, I'm a pretty broke person on the coast. I know plenty of people in the same boat as me.
Well, and this is still the shit that gets pushed out there, right? The coastal elites. Like, huh? I don't have any more money than you people do.
Your money also goes further than mine. You can buy a house. You probably aren't paying close to 2G in rent.
The house that I mean, Jeff recently, not recently, but a couple of years ago, he bought a house. And that house here it's now out of my price range. I cannot buy that over here now. Like, you know, if you live in the Midwest, like, you know, the economy is slightly different for you. Of course, wages there are slightly different as well, but fucking weird.
It is. It's just insane. Yep. Like, yes, it's the same thing where games. It's like, yes, because I've seen, like, that console war stuff. And again, I don't mean to begrudge them. I know that it's a service that some people want, and it's, you know, but, like, stuff like, what am I trying to say? A Digital Foundry, the whole, we're going to compare your game's graphics. It just serves one master. It's never a pretty one. It's always, because it brings out the worst possible people who, I mean, calling a spade, and I know, but like, I could not tell you if a game has 100 gigaflops or 17 trillion or it runs with, like, you know, natural light HDR and stuff like that. These are terms I hear in passing from time to time. And, you know, I'm sure it's better if a game has it, but, like, the way people talk as if they are like, oh, you know, this doesn't have dynamic shadowing. Oh, you know, I can't count the individual grades. I mean, you don't even go outside and do that. Why do you expect your video games to?
And you've never even seen grass.
and it's interesting you brought up Digital Foundry, Earl, because, like, somebody like Walt, I think it benefits him, right? Like, Walt, like, you look at it and go, I want to play the game on the system that you know, is doing it the best. But instead, it brings out exactly what you said, Earl, where it's like, oh, well, the Xbox version shit because it doesn't have this, even though it's, you know, running better on this, or the PlayStation version's garbage. And like, it's like, oh, please shut the fuck up.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's more of a challenge the way I see it. Like, my personal take on those videos, when it's done right, it kind of tells me what the challenge was for them to design for different consoles, different restrictions, and then PC that has no limit, right? So to me, it's like fascinating. It's like, yeah, I'm not gonna play on PC because I don't have a gaming PC, right? I kind of made that choice 2 years ago to like not even try to get a graphics card in this crazy market. And instead, I was like, I'm just going to focus on my next-gen consoles, and I want to experience the game, you know, in a good condition. So I used that as like, oh, wow, interesting enough. Like, this one, I'm mostly is frames, right? What pisses me off is when you feel a significant hiccup when you're playing, and I like to immerse myself in the game. And when, like, your screen is just kind of flickering, it kind of throws me off. So that's mainly what I'm looking for. I'm not looking for like, oh, you know what? But the draw distance is a little bit better on Xbox because that I need that draw distance so I can, you know, snipe a noob. I don't really give a shit about that.
Right. And if you are like, hey, like, you know, they run those frame counters and it's like PlayStation's running at a, you know, pretty steady 60. So is Xbox. But, you know, in this instance, it drops down here. Like, that would be something that for you, you'd be like, all right, well, the PlayStation version isn't dropping as much there, so it's going to be a better experience for me. But these people are all like, oh, see, that's why the Xbox sucks, or that's why the PlayStation sucks. It's like, that's not what this is for.
Yes. And again, it's like, it's not. And I know that's not what Digital Foundry is for. That's why I don't want to crap on them. But it is how it ends up being used by a lot of people, because it's kind of like you give people the tools to like weaponize stupidity, because like, yeah, I could like, I remember, again, this is just, I remember when people started talking about, like, I think it's Mario Kart 8 Deluxe on the Mario Kart 8, not Deluxe, the one on the Wii U. That runs at 60 frames per second, but it will occasionally have a dip down to 59 frames per second, and people were so upset about that. I'm like, how do you notice that?
You don't.
And like, I mean, there's like maybe one person out of like 1,000 that's going to notice the one frame difference.
I mean, me and Chris had like a what the fuck moment when I shared a tweet from a prominent Twitch streamer. I'm not going to name it because I don't want like shade or anything like that. But this person complained of like, oh my god, how does anyone do it? If it's at 30 frames, I get migraines. And me and Chris are like, what the fuck?
Yeah. Like, I know there are people that, you know, they are bothered by, you know, Pete used to, you know, co-host with us, and there were certain games that if they were not rendered properly, he would get headaches from and couldn't play. Like, you know, just make him dizzy playing them. That's like, that's a real condition that people have, but it's not like rampant across the board.
Right.
And 30 frames is pretty good in most cases.
I was very curious to say, like, how do they exist? Because I know video games, but like TV's 24 frames per second. So are movies.
Exactly. Yeah.
So, like, are you just throwing up whenever you look at the screen that isn't video games? Because like I remember like when I played GoldenEye in college, that made me sick. But that GoldenEye on the N64 dips like 10 or 15 frames per second. At that point, it's a sideshow. That was different than being like, oh man, this drops from like 60 to 45. I'm gonna pearl.
But... nuts. Anyway. Was there anything else? I mean, Mr. Ryan stepping down, lots of layoffs.
I mean, I think just kind of in passing, I feel like we've known this. I could be wrong. Netflix has a Tomb Raider animated series coming out. And I believe it stars Haley Atwell, who, if you've seen it, is Sharon Carter from the Captain America movies, and Agent Carter from Doctor Strange Mayhem of the Multiverse, Madness of the Multiverse.
Mm-hmm.
They
also have a Devil May Cry series coming at some point.
Yes, and I assume none of us have had time, but the new Castlevania series premiered today.
I have not, but I've heard good things from some people I trust on.
Yeah, I really enjoyed the original Castlevania series, so I can't imagine that this would be that much different. But yeah, I'm looking forward to it, especially... Oh, yes, the other thing that came out this week, sorry, I'm just... Kamiya? Yeah, Platinum Games. So
yes.
I don't remember if he was the president. I know he was up there, but he was kind of the big name for them. He was like he was part of the reason they started. I mean, I believe he was originally produced at Capcom and did the original Devil May Cry series. And then he moved over and helped co-found the Platinum Games. And, you know, they did Okami and stuff, but he would most likely, not most likely, but he would be known for, like, he'd, you know, the Bayonetta franchise, Wonderful 101, Scalebound when it was in production. But so, yeah, he's been a big part of them. So it's kind of shocking to see him go.
Yeah, and he's not leaving. He's not leaving games. He is just leaving Platinum. So. At least that's what the Platinum Games statement said. So they're just going their separate ways. Be interested what comes from him next. Platinum's always been they're such a weird developer for me. Like some of their games are hit, sure. And then there's ones that are just like, wow, how did this is Platinum, huh? Oh, okay,
yeah. It feels so much like two different companies at time because, there was a period of time where they were untouchable. Then there was also the period of time where they did, like, the licensed games, like the Transformers,
yep.
Ninja Turtles, and the Korra one, where it's like, how are you the same company? Like, is this just how you pay the bills? Because, like, you put, like, the D team, like, the janitors were working on these things.
And that could very well be it, right? But at that point, Platinum had that kind of reputation of like they were coming off Bayonetta, Vanquish, and then like they released that Korra game and people were like, what the hell is this?
I feel like the problem with that though is like they have these amazing, amazing games that people love and then don't buy.
Yeah. Like the Wonderful 101, I always hear people talking about how great that game is, but like, I don't actually know any. I mean, maybe you owned it, Earl, but
I own it twice.
Most people I know don't own it.
Yeah, and it was like they're like, oh, we have it. It was stuck on the Wii U, so they re-released it via Kickstarter on everything, and it did so again. So it's like, yeah. You folks got to show up when they put stuff out.
And they show up for Bayonetta, I guess. Enough for her. She was able to get two sequels out of there. So.
Yeah, and I honestly think that's only because Nintendo's just like, we got money, why not?
Yeah.
Because it does not change their bottom line, really. It's not like, again, it's not like it's a mega seller for them. It's just like, they don't really have like an action game of that nature.
And then one other thing, I mean, it's we're not into VR, but I guess Walt, you have put this in the group chat earlier this week that the Meta Quest 3 has been announced. It's up for pre-order. You said maybe there would be Xbox support for this or
cloud
gaming support.
That's now confirmed. Cloud gaming is going to be supported on that. Okay. In like a native way. Not just like, oh, go open a web browser.
Right. Okay, that's pretty cool, I guess. Not how I would want to play anything, but... Also, it looks like it's a little bit more expensive than the last quest. Actually, much more expensive.
A lot more expensive.
Yeah.
Yeah.
By $200. Yes. Yeah, quest 3 starts at $500. That's for like the low end model. And then it's $650 if you want it with more storage.
And I haven't seen the full specs, but I've read that the PlayStation VR is still more powerful than this one.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah,
like, the quest is standalone too, though, right? Like,
right.
Like I think if I understand what the quest is, I believe the quest is like the standalone VR that doesn't need the PC hooked up to it. So, like, that's kind of the problem with the PlayStation One, right? Is like it's what $600 for PSVR 2, mm-hmm. but you also need a PS5. So it's really $1,100.
Yeah, the PS5 is doing all the heavy lifting.
I don't know. I think VR, the way Tony and his kids experienced it, is VR for me. Like,
yeah, pay your $6 to ride on the thing at Dave and Buster's. That's all you need.
Yep.
I always feel like such a hero for saying it, but yeah, I mean, I think VR is a great novelty act. It's just not, I don't think it's ever going to be ready for prime time where people are like, oh, I want that into my house, because what do you do with it? It's a lot of wires and stuff that you have to manage, and like everybody thinks it's cool when you try it out, but then it's like, oh, now what?
Now you have this thing to put away and then take out again. And pack up again. And every time you're bringing out, it's like to play a video game. All I do is grab my controller off the shelf and hit a button.
Yeah.
For that, you need to like take everything out and hook everything up, and that's an investment.
When it's commit. Like it's a cool party thing once, right? Like, hey, check out this thing. Like, it's pretty cool. But like every time you have people over, they don't want to put your headset on.
Yeah. It's cool for the person who's doing it. It's not cool for anybody else. Like, I'll look at how stupid you look wearing the thing.
I mean, I guess that could be cool for some people if you like really look a fool.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's that'll be out there at $500 and $650, which is almost double what the Quest 2 was released at. And one final thing that I'm seeing recently pop up on Twitter, it looks like PlayStation is removing all of their mentions of the Star Wars Knights of the Old Republic remake from their social media channels.
Oh, no.
They've hidden the trailer from 2 years ago. They're like deleting other posts about it. I don't know what's going on. I know we knew it was delayed, but it does not sound promising for that game.
It does not.
No, that sounds not the opposite of delayed. It sounds worse than delayed. Decapitated.
Yeah.
Perhaps.
I mean, I would like to play that game. I would like to play a remake of KOTOR, but it's not sounding promising right now. So, what have you guys been playing this week?
Wow! Don't everybody jump at once. I've been playing Monster Hunter Now.
It's the, how is that? It's the phone game, right?
Yes.
Pokemon Go for Monster Hunter.
Okay.
So,
that's what I thought.
So premise. It's very similar to Pokemon Go. So you. I guess the story in the game is that these monsters from the Monster Hunter universe and some of the characters have started like popping up in the real world. But so basically you pull out your phone, you wander around and you find monsters and you fight them. It starts off with like really low level monsters. So if you played, and it's based on Monster Hunter World. So the progression is very similar. The monsters are like the same. So you start off, you fight Great Jagras, and you fight Kulu Yaku. You fight like the weaker monsters to start off. And you kill the monsters, and you
make equipment and you make weapons. As you do stuff, you get a hunter rank. As your hunter rank goes up, you get more stuff. I mean, it's similar progression to all of these games. The thing I would say in comparison to Pokemon Go at launch, there's more to do and it's more interactive. So like, there's lots of stuff to go out and find. There's lots of monsters to go out and kill. The battles themselves are pretty interesting. They're short.
After a while,
you notice the lower level monsters you're like killing almost immediately, and then occasionally you'll run into a battle that will take like 30 seconds or a minute.
How do they operate?
I think that's so. What
Earl was asking.
You can so you have your weapon, whatever it happens to be. There's a sword and shield combo that hits really quickly. If you have a hammer, that takes a while to swing, but it does more damage. And it's basically you're tapping on parts of the monster to hit those parts. So like if you want to hit the monster in the head, you're tapping on its head. If you want to hit it in the wing, you're tapping the wing. If you want to move closer, you can flick the screen to move closer. If the monster is trying to attack you, you can flip the screen to either side to like roll away or flip back to like, you know, back away from the monster so it doesn't hit you. If you time it right, you can do like a perfect dodge, and then your next attack does extra damage. So the battles are like interesting. They're not like nothing. It's more than you saw anything in Pokemon Go at launch. Like Pokemon Go now has like battles, and you can go out and fight Team Rocket, and there's like stuff to do in that now. But at launch, it was just like wandering around catching Pokemon, and that was like all you could do in the game. This is a little more than that.
Mr. Chairman, yes. I have a follow-up question. Can you kick the monsters in the balls?
You could try to stab them in the balls if you want to.
Okay, thank you. That's all I had.
There's a story. You have a other thing. You have a Palico, like you do in the Monster Hunter games. As you're like walking around and you're looking at your little map, the Palico will run out and grab stuff that's just laying around, so you don't have to constantly like tap stuff. There are items that can be picked up that the Palico can't pick up, but you do have to like tap them yourself. But those tend to be like landmarks.
What's the microtransaction aspect of it?
You can see. I haven't really found a need to actually buy anything yet. I know you can buy health and healing items, but it also gives you 5. What do they call them? Like healing herbs or something at the beginning of every day, so you don't ever have to actually buy any. Mm-hmm. You could also buy more equipment space. Although if you pre-registered the game, so I pre-registered it because so I could download it as soon as it came out, you got like twice as much space for items. So I'm not even close to using up all that space. And as you like start getting into like the more costly equipment upgrades, like you use up so much of that stuff that you never end up actually running out of space.
Okay.
I don't know. I'm enjoying it. It's a nice time waster. The only thing I find annoying about it, I try to play when I'm on the metro, and if you're moving at high speeds, you can't play.
It thinks you're driving.
Yeah. Well, it the annoying part is it puts up this little message, and you can tell it I'm a passenger, and it doesn't make any fucking difference. You still can't play. Like, oh, you're just mocking me. You don't. You just like to know whether I'm driving or not. Is that it? You're like trying to find out something about me. Is that what's going on? Because like it won't move. It won't let you play at all.
There in one thing from Pokemon, I guess.
It does. Like in your map of the world, it does like make it into terrains, which is kind of cool. So like, you can open up the map in your apartment, and you're like maybe to that day you're like in the middle of the desert. So you'll find desert monsters around you. And then you can walk and see on the map, oh, there's a swamp over there, so you can walk to the swamp.
There's reasons to like go out and wander about. I don't think it gives as much incentive for the walking while playing as Pokemon Go does. Because Pokemon Go has like quests you can fulfill by walking around, and the eggs hatch if based on how far you've walked while playing the game. There's right. nothing like that in Monster Hunter now at the moment. It wouldn't shock me if they added things like that in the future, but currently there's really no incentive. So like I'll be sitting on the metro and I'll be at a stop, and I'll like get all the stuff around the stop and kill all the monsters. And then the train will move, and I, you know, take my 90-second break, and then it'll stop again, and I'll play again. And it's kind of like, okay, that's great, but there's no like incentive to like wander around while playing. And like it's kind of weird to like in Pokemon Go, if you stopped, you throw a Pokeball or two and you catch a monster and you move on. And this one, the battles are a little more intense. So it's kind of weird to be standing in the middle of the sidewalk, like in a fight.
I was going to say, I mean, you've played Pokemon Go. I don't know if you still play Pokemon Go.
Oh yeah. No, my kids and I go out regularly on Pokemon Go walks still.
Is it very similar, I guess, map-wise or location-based? Like, oh,
yes. I think they use the same technology.
Okay, so it's still very much like, oh, if this is a landmark, it's yep. probably a landmark. Okay.
Yeah. There are things, it does spawn things on the ground that aren't landmarks, unlike Pokemon Go, where everything is landmark-based. So, like, you'll find, like, deposits of iron or whatever just by walking around that'll be there randomly.
That's good. They learned something then from like the fact that, you know, people in the Midwest or
right.
in
there
the
might
rural
not be
areas have nothing.
Yeah. But I have enjoyed it so far. It's a nice little thing. I don't know if it has like the staying power that a Pokemon Go has. I think simply because there's so many Pokemon and Pokemon is so popular.
Yeah.
Monster Hunter's like incrementally less popular. And there's fewer monsters.
I also don't
like
think
way fewer.
I also don't think people think of Monster Hunter in that way. Like you're expanding it. I'm like, so much of it doesn't sound like Monster Hunter to me.
Yeah.
I mean, if it's a hit in Japan, they you know they're good.
Yeah.
That's majority of the market share for that particular franchise.
But I'm sure that they were hoping for another Pokemon-type hit.
Because, yeah, I mean, they've also tried it. I mean, I forget if it was them. But didn't somebody also do, like, a Harry Potter version?
Yep.
Harry Potter Go?
I forget what it was called.
Hogwarts something. Yeah.
You walked around, and you could have, like, spells and stuff like that. I mean, because, again, the idea of, like, making walking fun... or making exercise in fun isn't new, and it's actually very novel. But it's like, I feel like, you know, Pokemon is just such a brand that it's just trying to catch lightning in a bottle that yeah. it's harder and harder to do.
So, do you play anything else besides Monster
Starfield? But I think we kind of covered the gamut on Starfield. I have finished a few of the side quest lines now. Actually, my favorite one might be the corporation one. I think it's called QG Corporation, something like that.
Yeah.
Where you're literally like engaging in corporate espionage. Where you're you're like trying to sneak through other corporations, like plant things on their computer. Or like steal information. It's one of the more interesting ones because I've never really had anything like that in a Bethesda game before. I don't know that the sneaking or stealth in the game is particularly good, or maybe I'm just not good at. Like my character's not built for that because I would rather kill things. I did get mocked in one of my missions at the end because they're like they suggest that you not kill people, and there was one I got caught right at the beginning. I'm like, well, oh well, and pulled out my gun and just started shooting everyone. And like, we specifically instructed you not to kill anyone. And my character is just like, yeah, well, they shot first.
You sent the wrong person then.
I've been ignoring the main quest for a while, though. So I've been doing all side stuff.
So this came up, I think, last week with Jeff. And I know, you know, Walt's been approaching it like normal Bethesda games. It did when it was a little bit hard with Jeff was in and out of coherence last week.
That's true. I listened. It was an experience.
I thought he got his point across, but it's maybe a little scatterbrained. But I do think I've seen more. You know, we talked about this where critics and some people are suggesting that you play through that main quest first. And I know Walt's like, that's not how you play Bethesda games, and I agree that's not how you play most Bethesda games. I do think this one, specifically because of what Jeff has said about the multiverse, this one was designed for you to like play and then run that corporate espionage thing, but like not do anything else. But they didn't set the game up to prevent you from doing anything else, which I think they've done in previous Bethesda games, like Fallout, like where you can only choose like one faction. That might not have been them though. That might have been a Obsidian,
right?
Yeah. So like where they lock you out of a quest line because of you could still go, you can still be in the Space Marines, but then also be in the Space Pirates. Like,
yeah. Some of it doesn't make any sense. Like, you're like, I'm going to play through the whole Rangers quest line. Oh, the Rangers hate the Vanguard, but I'm also going to play through the whole Vanguard quest line. It's fine.
Exactly. And if they had locked you out of that, it would have made the multiverse aspect of this make more sense.
Yes.
And would have then guided people to replay it in different ways. Whereas I think most people still want to approach it like Walt and Jeff wanted to, where it's like, I'm going to play all the side quests before I finish the game, because that's how you play it, Bethesda game.
Yeah. Well, I guess if Tony's done, I can jump into my Starfield findings as well, right?
Mm-hmm.
I've been playing Starfield. I'm close to level 50 now.
God.
Level
29.
Level 50, I maxed out my sneaking. Sneaking in that game is fantastic. I just finished that quest Tony was talking about. They give you a sneak suit, so no one can hear you. Sneak shots all over the place.
They heard me anyway. I don't know what happened.
Well, I had the sneak all the way up. I mastered it.
Maybe they heard my gunfire.
So you invested in the sneak skill.
Yes, okay. The sneak perk is completely maxed out, and I put suppressors on all my weapons.
That's not how 20 phases.
Wait, there are suppressors for weapons? I don't understand.
Exactly. What I'm finding in this game, right? Like the outpost stuff, you have to go out of your way to figure it out. It's a whole economy within an economy kind of situation. It's a means to an end. It's for people who want to be like, I want to make my own legendary weapons as opposed to finding them, right? So you make an outpost, you can collect stuff and fabricate and et cetera, et cetera. It's like, it's complex on paper, but in practice, it's pretty simple. It's a couple of clicks away from like making a refinery, connecting it to a storage unit, and then having that storage unit, you know, put stuff into like the ship's cargo loader. And so that when you land, it just drops it into your ship, you know, that kind of situation. For the sneaking and all that stuff, when it comes to like crafting your own kind of adventure, like I understand everything you said about the multiverse kind of situation, but I think it's one of those things where if you take it as like, oh, you know what? In this timeline, I'm going to do this. In this timeline, I'm going to do that. You know, and you do all the different branching stuff. It makes a lot more sense in practice than it does on paper. If that makes sense.
Sure. Like I think that's what I was trying to say is like,
yeah,
it's it may not be executed. Well, it's also not conveyed to the player. Like, it's not conveyed to you that this is what that game is until much later in the game. So you've already invested 25 hours or 30 hours.
Yeah, it's like the typical Bethesda kind of third act twist that changes everything. But in this particular case, unlike in the past, you wanted to make multiple characters so you can experience the good side, the neutral side, or the bad side. You can literally do all in just one character if you wanted to.
Yeah.
Aside from that, I think the whole rush to finish that messaging, I think it did a lot of people a disservice. Because regardless, people like Jeff were going to finish it faster than others, right? But this way, he would have invested a little bit more in side quests and maybe got him better gear, or brought up a different section of. I think I saw someone on Reddit post like, "Oh, I have, something like 60 hours in the game. And I just found out like there's an underground section to New Atlantis. What the fuck, you know?" But it, and if he took his time just doing side quests and activities, he would have found it organically, you know. So there's a lot of those little kind of things where I think the rush, I got to hurry up and finish. I think that hurts this game more than anything.
And it was such bad advice to give people. Like, I was looking at Jeff's achievements when he had finished. Like, he beat the game, and he wasn't even level 25 yet.
Yeah.
Like, he didn't have the achievement for killing 300 people. Like, things that you get, like, organically, like, he just missed so much stuff. And, like, once you kind of hit that end crescendo, like, your desire to play any game is going to, like, immediately, like, be gone.
Well, and this does a disservice from what Jeff was explaining. It also does a disservice to you in the fact that, like, you know, he had a cool ship, he had cool armor, and it strips
all of that gone,
from you. And it's like, so all that time investment you put into it, I think if they had left him with his ship, and left him with his armor and like his weapons, he would have felt more, you know, compelled to, okay, cause you could skip the story stuff at the beginning and then just start doing side stuff. But he's like, now I have shitty gear. Now I have a shitty ship. Like, I don't want this. Like, can you just shut it off?
Yeah. I don't know. It's odd. And at the same time too, he was extremely frustrated. He felt like he couldn't do the levels the way he wanted to envision it because he hadn't developed the perks or he hadn't like because there's that's what I'm noticing, right? Lock picking, security, and other certain perks, they drastically open up how you can approach the games, like dungeons, if you want to call them dungeons, right? Which is like the big set pieces, and they completely change how you approach all that stuff. So if you're rushing through, you have to do kind of like what I advise Jeff to do is like, dude, put it on easy and just to get through it then, because you're kind of stuck. You're completely underpowered, you know? And that kind of takes away, because the whole idea is this is an embodiment of your character. All the decisions kind of help mold how you play the game. And like you guys argued two episodes back, it's like, because he was getting mad about the persuasion perk. It's like, dude, you're not using it. Then why are you trying to level it up? Right? And he's like, no, because I fucking want to, because he wanted press A to solve everything, right? Yeah. And get past this point and hurry up, because the reviewers kind of told me to hurry the fuck up, right? And I think that takes away from it. Like, I've been doing it organically and everything feels like every little minor milestone, you persuaded somebody. Oh, fucking dope. I finished this particular quest line. And they gave me a neural implant where I can manipulate people out of nowhere. Now I can like highlight dudes and make them like run to the corner and shit, you know? So it's like little silly things like that, like that I didn't know existed in the game. And now I have
that conversation too, by the way, you're talking to them and you're like, oh, manipulate. Oh, yes.
And then you can just literally, instead of persuade, you can just tell them like, oh, you're going to do this. And they do it, you know? So it's like, it's there's all these layers to it where if you actually take your time and just experience the world, build your character, right? Figure out what gameplay you want to actually play. Because if you try to be like an all-encompassing kind of god character, You're going to have to play it multiple times. You're going to have to do the new game plus, like, up to, like, 5-6 times in order to do all that. But if you
I think what Bethesda wants you to do.
Yes.
They want you to do new game plus multiple times, but
yeah,
it's also the way they strip everything away is kind of disincentivizing people to do that. So, like, they get to that point that Jeff did, and it's like, man, you took all my cool shit away.
Like, do your outposts disappear? Like,
everything's gone.
Hours,
yep.
And that, that's just
you basically.
It doesn't make sense.
Yeah,
your power. You keep your powers, right?
Yes, you keep your.
You keep your powers and your stats your and your perks. Yeah,
yeah.
But all your equipment, all your outposts, all your exploration, all that's gone. So you have to restart. And it's like, that's like in a game that has this much stuff to do. It's like, I don't want to reset up my 5 outposts and my training. And I don't want to have to get hundreds of thousands of credits to get a new ship or build a new ship that I spent an hour and a half, you know, mucking around in their Lego builder. I don't want to do that again.
Yeah,
that's stupid. It's stupid that they put that in.
But I mean,
it's contrary to how people play these games. That's the problem.
There is an option to not do New Game Plus. You can just kind of stick with the world as is, right, and keep playing. But if you do decide to go New Game Plus and you have the perks, right, for like the shipbuilding and all that stuff, et cetera, crew, all that crap, you are going to get to those points much, much faster. So it's not balanced. It's just not ideal, right?
Yeah, it's like, as you said, as Tony said earlier, like, you know, you're going to lose a little bit of interest once you beat the game, and then it takes all your shit away. And it's like, even if you get it back quickly, it's like, man, I don't want to spend time.
Right. Getting it back. Thing I already did.
Essentially, New Game Plus is for people who fall in love with this universe and they want to experience, like, for this playthrough, my love interest is going to be this person.
Yeah.
Well, for this playthrough, I'm going to destroy the Vanguard, you know? Or I'm going to betray the Vanguard at the end of X quest or whatever, you know?
And I think it's a really cool idea. They maybe don't execute it or explain it to the player early enough.
Yeah,
that's how you should play this game.
Yes.
Yeah, I think ultimately with the review suggestions, hurry up and beat the main quest. That was fucking dumb.
And that is a stupid suggestion. Don't listen to that. Don't do that.
I am very fascinated by that theory, because like, is that the point of a reviewer though? Should they tell you like, oh, beat the game and then it gets interesting? I feel like that is an editorial, but not necessarily a review. And I have seen that. There are certain games where like it kind of makes sense. Like I remember, again, what is Sonic and the Black Knight, where like, when you beat the game, you don't actually beat the game, and that's slightly different. What was the other game? Oh, Pikmin, where they're like, oh, a game gets really interesting after you beat it. I mean, again, I feel like that's tantalizing where it's not review. I sometimes do feel like you do people a disservice where it's like, because again, you see reviews all the time complain about the fact that we got to rush through a game in like 2 weeks to beat it. Then why would you tell your consumers to do the same thing?
It's kind of productive. It doesn't make any sense.
Yeah.
I really think it's because this, like, the game itself does not tell you that it is this multiverse thing. And so the reviewers, and I get what you're saying, Earl, it is very much editorializing in there, but they're like, hey, if you do this thing, you'll understand what the game is, because the game does not tell you until the end that it is this thing that is going to branch off and you can have different versions of yourself and do different adventures. If you're playing it like a regular Bethesda game, you're like, well, I'm going to do all this shit because when I get to the end, they're going to roll credits or throw me back into the world or whatever. But like, I don't want to do it after that. So it's just a weird way of, you know, pushing it out to the player. Still a good game, but just,
oh yeah.
It's a weird way.
I'm enjoying it quite a bit. It's really good.
I really like it. I think it's the most polished they've ever released a game. And it's only going to get better going forward. I think some of the road mapping they've been mentioning, the long-term support, like DLC, end game, mid game, that kind of deal. And the fact that they're focusing on quality of life right now is a great thing. Like, I would really love a fucking a map, you know, like an area map that's worth a shit, well, so know, I can like find my way better.
Especially when you're on a planet and you're in a city, and yeah. It's like, I just want to know where I need to go.
Yeah.
And you just know they're going to release a way for you to make your own transportation on planet to, you know, explore planets on foot.
Give me my speeder. Damn it.
Yeah. You're probably going to be able to design your own. You know that's in the works. That's why they probably like, they knew that, hey, that's going to be a great DLC. You know? I think it's a great game. It lives up to everything that was promised. I'm also a realist. I didn't want to spend 4 days traveling to Jupiter in real time. That's not my thing.
And I get that there are people like Sean, that is, like that is something they wanted, but this game never said that it was going to be that. It never said it was going to be Star Citizen.
Yes. Yes. Which, oh, congratulations, Star Citizen. They're officially in the alpha phase now. They announced it this past week. Congrats to them. Congrats to them.
They're in alpha. After
official.
How long has it been now?
I don't even know what that 6 years. That game.
8 years.
8 years and like $26 million in development or something like that?
200. It's well over $250 million that they have fundraised.
Never mind. My numbers are completely off. I think that's how much Sean has spent.
$26 million might be what Sean has spent on ships. Yeah. I bought that game 7 or 8 years ago, like for $30, and I've been waiting for it to release. So maybe we're getting finally closer.
No, it's still a myth.
Yeah, it's not a thing. I think they did a lot of smart things to advance their formula, right? Like the fast travel is much better. You can kind of get to what you want to do better. The quests are fun, man. There's some side quests. I'm just like, shit. I'm just in the mine, but I'm like, man, that was fucking fun. You know, it's like, the hell is this one about? Yeah, it's just a random side quest. You know, and I love shit like that. And to think they're gonna add stuff that, you know, because the players are demanding like land vehicles, they're gonna give it to you. You know, it's a matter of time.
Yeah. You play anything else, Walt?
Vampire Survivors. I'm trying to unlock everything in that game, and I'm super close. I can literally taste it, but it's
you can
just
taste it like time blood.
Consuming. I was gonna say that it's like blood.
That game is surprisingly deep, man. There's so much to do in that game.
Yeah, our game of the year, right?
Yeah.
I'm still playing it.
I mean, I've played it the last few podcasts we've been on. It's a great, I don't want to say time code, that doesn't mean it, but it is. It's like a really great, like, oh, I got like half an hour. Let me just do a run and see how far I can get.
And the smartphone app is fantastic too, by the way. It plays so well on a smartphone. If you guys are interested in having that on your phone.
Yeah, we talked about it last week because I think Jeff was playing co-op and I was curious how that worked.
Yeah. And then I'm also, I play Party Animals, which is a ton of fun, by the way. We need to play it as a team. So you play this, you pick a cute little animal, a little horse, a little piggy, something, right? And you go around and you just beat the shit out of people. And it's fun as hell. And like the physics are hilarious because like there's one where like you have to knock everyone off the stage. So someone's trying to throw you off and you might grab them the last second or grab a piece of it and they're like tugging at you and they're like or they go back and take a running start and do like a jump kick to knock you off the stage. Or there's one where it's like football. You have to get the football to your goal and everyone's just trying to stop you. And it's just the dumbest looking shit in the world. Like you see a little beaver holding a football trying to get away and there's three guys who are like attached to his tail, his limb, his ear, and they're yanking him in the opposite direction. And someone comes in and just bull rushes everyone and he gets away and scores. That happens on a regular basis. It's chaotic. It's dumb. It's hilarious, dude. It's so much fun. I cannot say how fun that game and it kind of came out of nowhere on Game Pass.
I will download it.
I have it downloaded. I'm ready.
I'm intrigued.
It's dumb fun, though.
He's like, we should play it together. He's like, we're going to be a bunch of animals killing each other. I'm like, that took an upturn.
But... that's what it's all about. Like, it's just literally like, there's this. So the way it works is like any of these games, right? You hold our, like, the right trigger, and that's how you hold on to anything. And left trigger is to sprint, right? You jump with A. So if you sprint, jump, and do the strike button at the same time, you can do a jump kick. Or you can see your character, or you can headbutt with B. So someone could be talking to you or whatever, right? And you just headbutt the shit out of them, you know? And it looks hilarious because the physics are like ragdoll kind of. At the end of each match, they award like first, second, third place. And then you have control over the characters on the podium. And everyone starts beating the shit at each other. And then it ends with taking a snapshot. So there's a snapshot of like, look, a beaver punching like a gorilla in the face, and it's frozen like that. And you just hear everyone who has a mic just every single time cracking the fuck up because it's just the most, like, it's like a blooper from like a Pixar movie. It's just hilarious, you know?
I apparently watched the wrong Pixar movies, but
they're on Pornhub. I'll send you a couple links.
Don't watch those, Earl.
For the five games I've been playing, I went back to Texas Chainsaw Massacre with some friends.
Mm-hmm.
Finally escaped, so I'm happy about that. Because I played it, I think, opening weekend. I've not played it since then. But some friends, like one of my friends, really wanted to try it out, so we played it. We are terrible killers. I mean, I think we're new to the game, but we are terrible killers. I think the two times you played as the family of killers, the first time three people got away, one person didn't get away just because I think he was playing with us and we ended up cutting him up. The next time, three people got away before we even knew he got away. Like, the game tells you, but then we played as survivors, did not go as well. But I do think they've added, I mean, maybe I found new stages, but I do like that they've, you know, there's other ways to get out. The second game, I guess the easiest way is like if you open up the convenience store of some sort, you can just run out, and a bunch of people did that. It's such a wide open space, and it's very hard for the killers to run after you, that it's very easy to just kind of sprint after them. But yeah, I think the game is fun. I do think it's missing, I don't know, that there's just something about Friday the 13th, Dead by Daylight, which has like the ultimate last survivor, like, okay, you know, like you're down and out, and we're gonna give you like one last option to get out instantly if you can find it before the killer does. Where I feel like this kind of benefits the killer in the long run, because at some point Grandpa wakes up, if I forgot if any of you paid it, so it doesn't sound weird. Grandpa is kind of like this omniscient character you feed blood to, and as he goes up, like when he I think there's four or five levels, and every level he goes up, he wakes up, and for like 5 seconds, if any of the survivors move, they will be marked on the map. After a while, it just, like, once you're level five, it happens like every minute or so that you will just be pinged by Grandpa. So there's not, like, it's not even movement. You will just be pinged. So there's nothing to do there. So again, as it goes on, if the killers are playing well, it does become harder and harder as a survivor to sneak out. So I wish there were more ways to really survive in that environment without having to rely on really getting out earlier, sooner rather than later. There's no, like, in Friday the 13th, I believe you can, Jason, if you survive the night, eventually the cops will come and you made it to the morning or whatever. I don't think there's necessary in this either. So that would be something fun to add as well. Just like okay, we can't find this person. They just have to survive another 2 minutes or so.
How would you, like, a quick little question, like, how would you, if I told you rate this replayability on this compared to like Dead by Daylight, et cetera, et cetera? What would you give it?
Dead by Daylight, easy. Dead by Daylight has more, because this, I mean, this is a pretty basic setup.
What right would now. You give the, if Dead by Daylight is a 10, right? Because it's been around forever. This thing's it's not going away. What would you give Chainsaw Massacre?
I would say a 5, in that I think the core is fine, but like, even like taking Dead by Daylight aside for a second, like even Friday the 13th, which I mean, is kind of an incomplete game, and there's one killer, it's always Jason. They do more with that, where like there's different versions of Jason, and each, you know, like Jason's has his strengths and weaknesses, it plays into his horror vibe. And there's a lot of methods for the survivors to escape that isn't necessary. Jason can't, like, this one, if you are a good enough killer, if you know the maps, there's only so many ways that humans can escape. If you just kind of really camp those locations, you can get them there. Where, like, Friday the 13th, because you can, like, you can escape by starting a car, you can go in a boat, you can call Tommy Jarvis, you can call the cops. You can outlast him if he survived 10 minutes or whatever. I think if they start adding stuff like that. But the other thing, and the main thing, is really because it's based off of the first movie, there's really one location. There's different times in the day, but there's like one location. So it's very easy to learn the map after a while, where Dead by Daylight has dozens of maps. Friday the 13th, oh, you had a handful, but they made each version of Crystal Lake something slightly different. Because for some odd reason, Crystal Lake keeps on changing in every movie.
It's true.
I guess you got to rebrand after every murder spree. But yes. And then there's always just like the fun little things you could do in there that, like, in this one, you can, like, if you walk by a chicken, it makes noise and you can stab it to shut it up, which is kind of demented. But like in Friday the 13th, for example, if you played with other survivors, like if you're playing in the game, you can't communicate, because you can communicate if you're near people, and that's a really cool thing, because then Jason can also overhear it. But like, you can find walkie talkies, and like, if you find a walkie talkie somebody else does, like, I like that stuff, because it's also like, oh, like, you can find stuff, like, it will be handy as well. Like in this game, like, you can find health packs, but like, you really don't need it until you need it, and at that point you might as well find it somewhere else, because the cure is going to get you. Like at that point, you're being chased, or somebody's trying to kill you, or something's happening. So, yeah, again, it's on Game Pass. I do think it's fun. I think if we want to at some point play as a group, there's probably we could probably find, I guess, 6 or 7 people.
We need a couple more, but we could do it.
Oh, the other thing I learned last night, which makes sense, but I didn't realize, is like somebody has to be Leatherface, which kind of, it's fine.
Makes sense.
It does. It's just kind of like, so you can't just have like 3 other killers. So somebody always has to be Leatherface, which isn't so bad. But what we learned last night, which is a really dumb oversight, is if the other team does not pick Leatherface, the game does not assign somebody as Leatherface. It just disconnects the party, which is dumb. Why not just assign somebody as Leatherface in the game instead of being like, we couldn't find suitable players, you're gone.
Well, yeah, like I don't know how it breaks them out. Does it like you're on offense, you're on defense, like that type of thing, or?
Oh no, it just picks it. So it picks. You can pick as either survivors or killers, but like I think we're playing random. So, like, as a party of 3, like, we just all became killers at some point. But it's not, like, you couldn't continue with the same party. But, like, this one was just a different party. It was just, like, we were survivors, and then there was 3 people as the killers. And I guess they didn't want to be Leatherface, or none of them wanted to be Leatherface.
To me, whoever is the first 2 that select the killers, and then if, like, you're the 3rd and you're not Leatherface, you automatically become Leatherface.
Yeah, or, like, you started and somebody gets assigned Leatherface. But, like, it was so weird that, like, because it's a long timer for setup. It's like 2.5 minutes, which I think is a bit excessive. But like, yeah, nobody was at the face and it canceled. I'm like, oh, okay.
Which then puts you on another 2.5 minute timer once you do get matched up again.
Yes. Yes, it is not fun. That aspect of it, I don't really know why you need that on over timer.
Yeah.
Most of the changes you tend to do, at least I tend to do off menu. Like you do it in the when you're not playing. Like, oh, I have these perks. Let me check them out. Not like, oh, I'm going to start this game. Let me check out the perks now.
You play anything else, Earl?
Some Vampire Survivor. My sweet, sweet bit of Spire. But I think that might be it. I mean, aside from my obsession with Macross, but that never goes anywhere. So,
real briefly, because I've only played real briefly, but I think Walt has played a little bit more than I have of this. I tried Lies of P out.
Yeah, that's right. I did play that. Completely forgot.
That is not a ringing endorsement.
Which is fine. I mean, like, it's interesting to hear you say you didn't like it, Walt, because you enjoy Souls type games, and it's everybody I'm seeing talk about it seems very, very into it so far. I tried it out. I don't like Souls games. We've talked about this before.
Yeah.
It's a Souls game. I mean, at least in the early going, like, I did hear, like, oh, it's very much like Sekiro, where you gotta, you know, block and parry. Like, you do have to block, but I didn't find parrying to be as necessary, at least where I was yet. You're just fighting, like, police, they're like, police puppets and their dogs early on. Yeah. They're not hard at all, so, some weird mechanics in it, like, so if you block, and I don't know if this is a Souls thing or not, but if you block an attack, you take a little bit of damage as well. I did like that. If you immediately counter attack, though, you can regain that health back.
Yeah.
So I don't think that's in like Dark Souls in that.
No, that's Bloodborne mechanic.
Okay, I like that. That's neat. Like, you know. It's still the same thing though. I don't know what they call it, but it's like same thing. It's an Estus flask. Like, you have, so you have your three healing potions or whatever. There's also another meter though that I don't like. It's your durability on your weapon.
Ooh, yeah,
and once that, and once it breaks, like, you can still attack with it, but it'll like clank off, so you can't like combo with it anymore. Yeah. And it has like, it seems like it has its own, it's like called a repair kit, but like it has its own health pack that you can do, but I don't know where you get them because I only found one and couldn't figure out how to use it at the time either.
But like, there's some game mechanic built in, right? Your arm works as a sharpener. So if you hold L1 and hold square, I believe.
Okay.
He'll put the weapon and start grinding it on his arm and sharpen it back up.
Okay. So I was like, I don't know how I fucking fix this. And like, now I'm going up against enemies that are stronger. Like, cause like the game is very tutorialized in the beginning. And it's like, you're going through, you're killing the police puppets and their dogs. And then like, you fight like a mini boss. It's not very hard, but. Like, then I got out of there, and it's like, my sword sucked. Like, I could only, like, swing it once before it would clang off something, and...
Yeah.
If I had... Maybe I just missed the tutorial part, where it was like, you can sharpen your blade with your arm. Didn't catch that, so it was like, I'm trying to fight through, and it's like, this isn't where I get to the... What accounts for their bonfires. They're called stargazers, I think. Mm-hmm. And... it didn't repair it there. It was like, what's going on? Why is the game broken for me? I don't know. I want to see what the story is, but I don't think I'll ever get far enough in it to see what it is.
I will say that is what I'm most fascinated by. I try to seek out streams when it came out because I keep on hearing like this is like a Pinocchio story.
And you play as Pinocchio, yes.
And I'm just like, what? Why is Pinocchio? And it's like one of those things where it's like, yeah, maybe something's not belong in the public domain. But
the whole aspect of, like, I gave it a good shot. Like, Bloodborne is one of the platinums I did them on PlayStation. It's one of my all-time favorite games. Not just Soul games, like all-time favorite games. So, like, when they're like, oh, this is like, a, we took a lot of inspiration from Bloodborne. I was like, oh, cool. I'll try it out. And then it's not just an inspiration. In certain map layouts, it's a complete ripoff. Like the central hub feels very much like a similar church that's in Bloodborne. And how you get there feels very much like Bloodborne. Some of the mechanics, all that stuff, except it's missing that, you know, from software polish. It feels very much like a shell of it. So I think it benefits from Bloodborne being so old. Most of the people who are playing this now probably never played Bloodborne, you know? So they're just like, oh, wow, how inventive, how cool, how moody, you know, that stuff. As far as the story, you're Pinocchio, you wake up, you're one of the few, because in this society, the puppets cannot lie. They have this built-in kind of thing where they can't hurt humans. But what happened is, what you're trying to explain is why all of a sudden the puppets turned on the humans. So, like, the main inventor, which is Pinocchio's dad, is running around trying to figure out if it's he failed society or something else corrupted it. And you're playing the one puppet who can blend in with the humans and the puppets, because you can literally lie. And based on your lie is how, if you lie to certain characters, that's going to dictate the ending of the game. So that's basically the story. If you want to sweat through the game to get to those points to make those decisions, then yeah, you're going to be rewarded with one of many. I believe they said something like, I'm not sure, it was 8 endings that are possible in the game.
I am just so fascinated by them making an action game about Pinocchio. That is more than anything what I am here for, because that story sounds nonsensical. But
yeah. And plus, the main character looks like the dude from Dune. What's the name of that actor?
Timothy Chalamet.
Yeah, he looks like that.
Yeah,
so you're playing as
very, and this isn't a slight to Timothy Chalamet, but very like prissy. Like,
yeah.
Distinguished, but prissy. Like, I don't know. I thought it was funny. Like, immediately, like, you're introduced to Jiminy, but it's not spelled like Jiminy the cricket.
Yeah,
spelled differently, yeah. And it's not a cricket. Like, but it is sort of like your guide through this world.
Yeah. Did you catch that weird, that crappy line where like Jiminy will serve as your guide? He will be your conscience. Wink. In other words, I'm like, okay, yeah. That's how you connect it back to the old fable.
Yeah, well, and get around Disney suing you for
yeah,
using like similar names and shit.
Yeah.
Right. I will try to play to the first boss. I think I'm like halfway there, so I don't know. Like I like Earl. I'm fascinated by like the fact that people are like, this story is really cool, and I would like to see what it is, but I don't think I'll ever play enough of it to myself, at least. I may have to watch a stream. So I'm just not a Souls fan. But
I'm not particularly engaged, and I'm a Souls fan. I'm not, you know.
Yeah, I mean, we'll see. Lords of the Fallen comes out soonish, so that's also another Souls type game. I think that does not have the hook. Like, the Pinocchio hook is what got me to try this. Like, this is silly.
Plus, it's on Game Pass. You know, that's a big plus.
Right. I don't have to buy it. So.
And you get to find out the truth behind Pinocchio's eyes.
That. It's so cheesy. When you die, like when you die in Dark Souls, it's like, like, you died, like, across the screen. In this, it's like, lie or die. It's so dumb. And then when you respawn, like, it's like lying in progress.
Mm-hmm.
So it's, I guess it's meant to kind of be like one of those, kind of like a, what was the, like the Prince of Persia Sands of Time, where like when you would die in that game, it was like, that's not how the story went. I think that's kind of what they're going for here. It's like, you didn't actually die. Like, you're, if you told the story that you died, you lied there because you actually continue on. So, interesting enough, I guess, but we'll see. Shame you did not like it more though, Walt. Because I would have liked to see what you think as you got further into it.
I mean, I still might. I mean, I'm sure there's gonna be a downtime in the year, right? So,
and not the rest of this. I'll probably pick it up.
Yeah, it's pretty busy from here on out. Like, it's a Forza very shortly.
Mm-hmm.
Spider-Man.
Yeah, I'm picking that up. Like, I'm skipping Call of Duty. I haven't been entertained by Call of Duty in a while now, so maybe during that November kind of window.
Yeah, could work.
I'm curious because I think next week starts. What is? Oh, I guess the new FIFA, not FIFA, is out this week.
Not FIFA. Yes.
Yeah.
Not
FIFA. Football Club 20. Is it 24? In fact,
we didn't talk about this. How they delisted?
Yeah. So the list is FIFA 23.
They're like, make it go away. No one is buying this. Wild, FIFA's not a thing anymore. Goodbye.
Wait, that's so wild.
Assassin's Creed is next week?
Assassin's Creed is next week, yes.
Oh, wow.
I believe the 5th, if I remember correctly.
4th? No, 5th, yeah. So that is
shit. Hey, Tony, are you gonna shelf Starfield for Assassin's Creed?
I might take a break. Like, this Assassin's Creed is like short, I think.
So it's back to normal Assassin's Creed like.
Yeah. So it's like not going to take like 50 hours. It'll take more like 25 to 30.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I'm interested in it. I'm very interested in seeing what they do with this Assassin's Creed game.
I'm playing it for free. Got to play it for free.
That's the best way to play, right?
Wait, why?
Oh, yeah.
Because I had so many Microsoft Rewards points that I could. Yeah.
Another game I want to try out. Have you guys heard of this game called El Paso Elsewhere?
I have not, no.
So I've seen, it's not on Game Pass, but I've seen a few streamers and critics kind of talk about it. It is it's an indie game, but it's like the old, like the original Max Payne games.
Oh cool.
The diving and the...
Yeah, with bullet time. And yeah, so like I'm kind of interested in taking a look at it. Like, visually, it does not look fantastic, but if it plays anything like those original Max Paynes, but better, because going back to them is a little rough now. but if it plays like you remember them playing, that could be pretty cool. So,
complain about frame rate.
Yeah. But yeah, wow, those games very rough frame rate wise.
Yeah. Kids these days don't know what they got. Again, like I said, we were
paying
15, 20 frames per second, and those are considered the greatest games of all time. Like, according to time, it's like 15 frames per second or something like that.
Remember Super Mario World used to slow down in the bullet bill levels?
Good old days. Yeah, I mean, there's a reason that Sonic gets away with like the speed stuff. Like, Mario's not a very fast-paced, I mean, it didn't break, but it wasn't a fast-paced game. But yes, now people are like, oh, if it doesn't do... I'm like, yeah. Yeah, back in the days, we didn't know. We had bits. And to this day, I still don't know what that means.
It's like, what's an 8-bit game? Don't worry about it.
You'll never see it again.
Real quick, since we are wrapping up here, but Earl and I kind of talked about this last week. I know Jeff's not here, but we'll just vote for him. Our Game Pass game of August, although we are very close, we should probably just name
Starfield. Congratulations. Well done.
Yeah. So, but for August, I don't know. What do you guys like? There were two big options. There was what Earl was just talking about with Texas Chainsaw and then Sea of Stars, which came out at the end of the month. I think there's a clear winner there, but...
Oh, I said
I've only
that.
Played one of these games. Sea of Stars is fine.
Yeah,
sure.
I said that. We'll pretend there's other options, but it's going to be Sea of Stars. Again, I mentioned, I think Sea of Stars will be in a conversation at the end of the year.
A great game.
I think Texas Chainsaw will be a game I enjoy playing from time to time, but I don't think it's going to be in conversations for other things this year.
Yeah. And yeah, I guess while we're at it, since September is closing out, and I don't remember anything else in September on Game Pass, Starfield for September.
All right, Starfield. Good work. Congratulations.
Was out this month.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to reclaim my time real quick. As someone who's standing in for Jeff, I have a prepared message from Jeff. He said, while this game wasn't released during either of these months, he would like to nominate Paw Patrol Mighty Pups Save Adventure Bay on Game Pass for Game of the Year starting today. He wants to make sure that's one of the first ones you consider come January.
For Game of the Year, okay.
That's all I got. I don't know if it makes sense. It wasn't released this year.
No goal.
But it is in fact on Game Pass, and that's a statement from the gentleman I'm representing, Jeff
from the fine state of Illinois.
Is that game as good as that DC dog game?
Okay, it can't be worse than that DC dog game.
I would say it's better.
I do enjoy the new one, which isn't the dog game, but yeah, that dog game is crap. I had it on Game Pass. I'm like, no, even for free, this is too much work.
It's so boring, and you can finish it in like 2 hours, but it's even that was a struggle.
But you don't want to. Stop. Make it go away.
I did. Bad. I did finish it, but it's
of course you did. You're like, oh, achievement points. Give them. Pump them into my vein.
It felt like a mobile game tie-in that somebody's like, we can make more money off of if we put this on consoles.
Yes. So bad. And I think they were selling that game for like $40 or $50 to start with. Like crazy. I don't know anything about this Paw Patrol Mighty Pup Save Adventure Bay, but...
The Paw Patrol is out this weekend, though, right?
Yes. It's a Saw Paw Patrol combo weekend.
All right,
Saw Patrol. I believe it's called Saw Patrol weekend.
Yeah, Saw Patrol. Yeah, that's. I mean,
so you sit down with your like 4-year-old and you watch Paw Patrol Saw. And you watch Saw afterwards.
Hey, yeah. I mean, to be fair, double feature. It worked for Barbenheimer, so those are not the same demographic.
Hey, look! All I'm gonna say is Jeff has never been wrong in this podcast, not once. So I say we trust him.
Either. I mean,
he always sticks with his first impressions too.
I doubted him when he said best graphics should go to Kirby over Call of Duty, but you know, in hindsight, 100% correct.
I mean, visually, like art style, it's much nicer, but.
If you did not own a current gen console and know they existed, he's correct.
That's fair. Kirby was nice looking.
It was.
Paw Patrol, the Mighty Movie at 82% on Rotten Tomatoes. So.
It's going to be a good weekend because I think Saw is actually doing really well.
It is. I'm very surprised by that. So
I am very surprised. It's kind of like Ninja Turtles. That's a weird comparison, I know. But like, cause none of the Ninja Turtles movies have ever reviewed well until this one. And I feel like part of it, and I enjoyed this year's movie, but I feel like part of it was reviewers making up for the fact that like Dave does. Because I mean, the first Saw movie is an actually really good horror film. It's just a shame that there's like 8 other movies apparently. I like the second one too. The third one isn't bad. It just kind of gets really dumb after that.
Like most horror franchises after 2 or 3.
Yes. Yeah. But the thing is, they kill the main baddie.
In three.
Happens. Yep. And he's never been resurrected, which is fine. But he somehow keeps on coming back in all these sequels.
All I know is that all this Barbie, Oppenheimer, all that stuff, like, enjoy success while you can. When the Bluey movie hits and it's and it's dropped on the world, everything's gonna stop. And everyone's gonna watch Bluey.
Is there a Bluey movie coming?
I wish.
There's a game coming, which you guys better cover. That's gonna be a milestone release.
I think I dropped that in the group chat, right?
You did, yes.
There's a game coming. There's a new season they're wrapping up, and I believe they're building towards a movie. The live stage show for Bluey is a huge hit. My nephew went. He can attest. He said at various points, he said, "Ooh, ah, and Bluey." Like, so, you know what I mean? Put that shit on the poster. Bluey's going to take over this world, and there's nothing we can do to stop him. Nothing we can do to stop her.
I can think of some things. Euthanasia.
Stay away from.
Why?
Stay. Oh my god!
Did you do Bluey?
I know nothing of Bluey, and I, much like Tony, I think our kids are past that stage. Yes. So.
Yeah.
I got no kids.
I know way more about Bluey, and I'm fucking mad that we had was Sesame Street and fucking Barney when we were growing up. We deserve to have a Bluey. That's all I'm gonna say.
Okay. I think everybody deserves to have a Bluey. It's a really good show. But
it is a fantastic show.
It's like I can't even make Fendi's and the Nephews. It was like my friend's kids when I went to visit Ashley and watched it. And I watched a few episodes with them. I'm like, watch a lot of kids' shows are just really dumb for as an adult.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Oh no, there was like a Mickey Mouse show. I forget what it was called. And I'm sure other shows do this, but they would always like there's a mailbox on the screen, and they're like, "What's that?" It's a mailbox. I'm like, "Oh God, do we have to sit here for 10 seconds that you pause?" But I'm like, it's because the kids rewatch it and they pick up and they say it back. But as an adult, I'm just sitting here being like, "This seems condescending." Where I thought Bluey was really well put together and a really fun and clever show.
Man, all I know is that my nephew was like saying, because one of the few words he can pronounce because he's only two. He was saying Bluey, 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 Bluey. So I'm like, okay, I guess we're watching Bluey. And we started watching this episode called The Show, where they're reminiscing on the mother dog was reminiscing on what it was when the two kids were kids and what it was like to have pregnancy. And then Bluey kind of decides to tell a story. And he said, at one point, Bluey says, like, and then at one point, I thought I was going to meet a new brother or sister, but they never showed up. And the mom and dad hold hands. And I realized, holy shit, they just referenced a miscarriage. Right? And then, like, but then my little sister Bingo came into the world. And it was like a whole ray of sunshine, and everyone was smiles. And the next, and my nephew's just like, they're eating his like cheese snacks, and I'm there like, I might cry watching this damn show. and it's done so perfectly well, and it tells and it explains, you know, what it is to have an addition to the family, and how the adults just kind of turn to each other, and they just kind of like make that face, and then they look at their kids and they're like, through all of that, they're grateful to have their little family, you know. It's a beautiful show, man. I mean, it's hard as an adult to tell somebody like, hey, watch Bluey. Yeah. But if you want to feel good about yourself, watch some Bluey.
Well, that is an endorsement for sure.
And I mean, what we get is, I think most of it is on Disney. I know sometimes they're behind with the, because it's an Australian show, I believe. And I believe Australia tends to air episodes before we sometimes get them here. and then they'll make their way over. Again, I know too much about Fury as somebody who has no kids to even be like, no, it's them that make me watch this. But no, it's
hey, all I know is that I walked out of Target with a 4-foot Bluey plushie, and I'm the best uncle in the world because of it. So thank you, Bluey.
I need to find the next big thing. Because it's, I mean, some of it's not that, but some of it's weird. Like last year, it wasn't, but there was a year where they had like the creepy monkey things.
The monkey things?
It was like fingerings? Is that what they're called? Like you put them on your finger and they'd crawl down? I don't know. Kids toys.
Wait, who are we fingering? What's happening?
No, he broke up. I think he broke up. I think he was saying something about a show about fingering monkeys.
Not nice at all.
Discord broke up. That's all I heard.
That sounds like a you thing, man. There will be no fingering monkeys on this show.
No.
No. Monkeys need to be able to provide consent before the fingering.
I think we need to provide consent.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure. From what I've read, like if a monkey wanted to finger you, there's nothing you can do about it. You're gonna get fingered.
That's probably true. The monkey's not asking,
right?
No, those things are like sneaky strong.
All right. Well, on that note,
we gotta go.
Sea of Stars is our August Game Pass game of the month.
Oh, that's what we were talking about.
Barfield is our September Game Pass game of the month, and we'll be back next week. Earl, say goodnight.
For all the monkeys out there, have a good one.
Sorry, monkeys. Sorry.